Hammarskjöld once said, a good driver makes only slight movements of the wheel in order to give direction at the critical moment. It's a question of remaining wide awake and, so to say, saying our word in the way which seems to us to be appropriate, to give that touch to the wheel which helps to keep the car on the road. Now, the light touch has to do with relaxation, with detachment from not being so involved in the scene, whatever the scene is, that you can't see its dynamics and maintain your own quiet and stillness and relaxation, and just at the right moment, the touch that allows something to change for the better. There's one more thing I'll say about his integrated way, which is that he had mystical experiences. And that is such a privilege for a human being. I mean, we're all kind of earthworms and just live down here and we do our best and we try to pray. But it's often the prayer of a worm. And God doesn't mind worms. Worms should pray. And God is most receptive to the prayers.
Worms do good things.
Yeah, worms are great.
Make the soil good.
But only some people have a kind of contact with rich, mystical, and self-evidently real experience. So, for example, and he would draw from these experiences. They change you. It's like a dye, a very beautiful colored dye that's introduced into the person, and they are henceforth a little of that color. I mean, they can betray it, but on the whole, it's a little bit of, let's say, aqua dye. That person remains a little aqua for the rest of their life. Here's an example. This was from just before he became Secretary General, actually. Now you know. When the worries over your work loosen their grip, then this experience of light, warmth, and power, from without, a sustaining element like air to the glider or water to the swimmer, an intellectual hesitation which demands proofs and logical demonstration prevents me from believing in this too, yet through me there flashes this vision of a magnetic field in the soul created in a timeless present by unknown multitudes living in holy obedience, whose words and actions are a timeless prayer, the communion of saints, and within it an eternal life. Really very beautiful.
It's beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful.
And there are other entries of this kind. I think I'll read just one more. This was from rather late in his UN career. This is a summary of many experiences. To have humility is to experience reality not in relation to ourselves, but in its sacred independence. It is to see, judge, and act from the point of rest in ourselves. Then how much disappears and all that remains falls into place. In the point of rest at the center of our being, we encounter a world where all things are at rest in the same way. Then a tree becomes a mystery, a cloud, a revelation, each person a cosmos of whose riches we can only catch glimpses. The life of simplicity is simple, but it opens to us a book in which we never get beyond the first syllable.
Where is that from?
Markings.
Markings.
And this is 1959. That's practically a summary of many of the points that I've raised about stillness, about silence, about selflessness, which is another word for humility.
And about seeing the world in a different way, because suddenly you don't own reality, and reality becomes different to you as well.
Yeah. And just so that you see the conversion, because I'm particularly interested in the way personal spiritual experience can be converted into effective
action.
So in 1954, in Markings, he wrote, "To be governed by that which comes alive when we have ceased to live as interested parties or know-it-alls, to be able to see, hear, and attend to that within us which is there in the darkness and the silence." So there's the conversion.
It's a letting go to a power that is greater, and yet being part of that power, but not acting as if everything is about you.
Exactly.
And your powerfulness and your position, you're like a channel.
Yeah, and this was practical material. I mean, when he was in the Middle East working out very, very difficult negotiations, 1956, he wrote in Markings, "Understand through the stillness. Act out of the stillness. Prevail in the stillness." Goodness gracious, there's so much to learn from this man.
It's what you least expect of a politician in the small p, but certainly involved in that global dimension. You've alluded twice now. He died in a plane crash. It was an accident, with inverted commas. You don't believe that, do you, from what you're saying?
No, I think that the investigation of that air crash in 1961, late 1961 and 1962, there were three investigations. Those investigations, one of them was led by a white supremacist government that just ignored and denigrated evidence provided by Africans who had seen what they had seen. And what they saw was one or two pursuit airplanes attacking a larger plane at just the right time of night. The UN has been investigating for about a year now on the base to assemble and to acquire from member nations who possess classified information, have been trying to obtain classified information and solve this problem once for all, because it's been more than 50 years now and the hour is late to solve it.
Who does it, do you think?
Oh, it would be so imprudent of me to say what I think in that regard, because it all has to be evidence-based.
But yeah. He was definitely taken out.
I would be so surprised if the theory that it was pilot error that prevailed for the better part of 50 years were true. There were many parties in the Central Africa at that time who found him inconvenient. And so unfortunately he joined the company of the great martyrs of Gandhi in our time, Martin Luther King.
And he was part of a group of people in the 20th century, like Robert Southwell, like Ardner, who wanted a union, either a global union or a European union, but had a sense of the unity of humanity.
Yeah, they have to be careful with that, because people would accuse him of wanting to create a kind of super government at the UN, and it was never the case. He always knew that he could only do what the member nations asked him to do. And he never made the assumption that the UN was a super government. However, he did feel to his last cell in his body that the UN Charter and the Universal Declaration of Human Rights were the charter for a decent human future. And they still are.
Still are. It's great his work was found, Markings. It's great that you are keeping his memory alive, because just from our talk, it is very clear that he has much to say to the 21st century, particularly in the integration of mysticism with action and change in this globalized world. Your book is called Hammarskjöld, A Life, published by
University of Michigan Press.
University of Michigan. And is it available in the shops?
It's best bought through one of the
Amazon
book services, or from the University of Michigan Press website. The paperback exists as well now.
You clearly love him, and you clearly understand his writings, because even listening to you reading them, there is a level of they need unpacked, they need to be savored and taken into the soul, and really that for the individual person to let them speak to them as well.
Yeah, part of the holy vice, the first turn of the holy vice for many people, certainly one of them for me, is just to begin getting to know Dag Hammarskjöld. It's a discipline. It does take contemplation and savoring, a new kind of reading, or let's say an old kind of reading, which was called Lectio Divina. When you really, really paid attention to the written word, which is something he greatly cared for.